This podcast does not provide medical advice. The information included but not limited to any videos, texts, graphics, image materials, or any programs or consultations contained within this podcast are for information purposes only. The podcast does not constitute providing medical advice or professional services. It does not constitute a patient-physician relationship. If you have medical concerns, please seek out your private physician, or if you feel you have a medical emergency, please contact 911.
Welcome to Carves and Coaching, the podcast where we combine our love for carves, medicine, and self-development to get you to the life that you deserve.
Hey guys, Dr. K here. Welcome back to another podcast. I've got a special guest here with me today, Dr. Nasiruddin. I call him Samir. I've known Samir for some time now. We're going to have a great discussion. He's a physician. He's an entrepreneur. He likes carves, and I think we're going to have a great time talking and going through all of those things. Samir, if you'd be kind enough, just kind of tell us, you know, where'd you go to school? What do you do now?
Yeah,
things of that nature.
Absolutely. First of all, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
I'm a local boy. You know, I grew up around here. I went to high school literally right in Hoffman Estates. I mean, I went to undergrad at University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, who happens to be doing very well in basketball this year.
Yeah,
so I'm
they
very
are.
Proud. I did my training and residency at Categorical Internal Medicine at Cook County. And then I have a subspecialty, a fellowship in phlebology, which is the study of veins. Mm. It's a relatively new field. I'm like, you know, a very small number of phlebologists out there, but I have a board in internal medicine, and I have a board in phlebology, in venous and lymphatic medicine.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So how long have you been out? How long have you been practicing?
Well, I mean, it's been what? I mean, I finished, 2004, I would say, I finished residency. I mean, it's been, I think we're going into almost 20 years now. I mean, if you want to count residency as well, I mean, you're talking almost a quarter of a century, which really makes me feel old.
Yeah.
But I've been out in the market for a little while now, so, you know.
That's great. Yeah. So what made you want to be a doctor?
I was one of those kids that was always kind of like really good at science. I was surrounded by physicians. One of my mentors, he's an allergist. He passed away. He kind of guided me along that track. I happened to be really good at math and science. And eventually it was just like a calling and more of a liking. It's always something that I, you know, wanted to do. I was never really, you know, a computer guy. I thought about like math and, you know, like business, but ultimately it came down to science. I really enjoy and love being a physician and taking care of people. It gives me great satisfaction.
So when you originally came out, did you actually start your own practice immediately, or what did you do?
Yeah, so I was one of the weird ones, right? So I guess this is where the whole entrepreneurial thing comes into play. There's a funny story, actually, if you don't mind, if you have a couple minutes, right?
I'm not going anywhere, so
yeah,
go right ahead.
So I finished residency as an internist, and I came out. I didn't like a lot of the job interviews that I was getting, so I was literally like on the couch. You know, I was just checking up at my parents' house. I was kind of in that like limbo and transitionary phase. And my dad's like, "What the hell are you doing? Like, get up off your butt, you know?" And I'm like, "I don't like any of these job offers I'm getting." And he said, "Well, my dad's a builder, by the way. And the name of one of my companies is called SkyPoint. And the name of his building company was called SkyPoint Builders." So he said, "I tell you what," he goes, "if you think you can do it better, I will go ahead and help you and facilitate and start up, you know, do a build out for you, and you can start up your own clinic and you do it yourself. You got to pay me back every penny." Mm-hmm. And I said, "You know what? I'll take you up on that." So basically I started up my first practice, not working for anybody, completely clueless, lost probably a ton of money, but really learned a lot through experience. And, I started off actually as independent. I started off never working for anybody, but starting my own practice from the ground up, which I don't really recommend,
right.
But it taught me a lot, and it basically allowed for me to stay motivated and work for myself and continue to thrive and, you know, make a lot of mistakes along the way. But, I mean, you get there, right? I mean, I am where I am today, and I think it made me a bigger person as a result of that. You know?
No, and that's actually the key. You know, we talk about that all the time. Everybody's always afraid to fail. I know we've had these discussions before as well. And really, through failure is where we get most of our knowledge, you know? So,
well, I failed a lot more than I've succeeded. But I will say that, you know, it's definitely made me stronger. And anybody that said that they've always succeeded at everything that they do is not really a true entrepreneur, because I think a true entrepreneur is definitely have way more failures than they do success.
Yeah. Right? I was reading something, and I could be wrong on this, so nobody quote me, but I think an entrepreneur starts something like 7 or 8 companies before one actually sticks.
That's right.
So again, there's a long list of having those failures until you get comfortable and something actually takes off.
Absolutely.
Which is actually one of the things that fascinates me about you, because I've known you for a while now, is you did start with internal medicine, but then you pivoted.
Yeah.
You went to veins, and you also, veins is only part of your practice. Yeah. You actually do a lot of injectables. How did that come around?
Yeah, I do. So that's another, I got a few good stories. So basically, when I came out as an internist, and hybrid vein specialist, it takes a while to get a seasoned vein practice going. But in the interim, I had an opportunity where someone said, hey, do you want to do this on the side? And I was offered to become the medical director, an active medical director of an acne clinic. Mm. Now, this is back in like 2006 or 2007. And essentially what they did at that time, aesthetics was kind of a new field. I mean, at that time we were almost testing like bovine collagen before actually doing fillers. Nowadays they call me like one of the OG injectors because I'm kind of a dinosaur in the field. Right. But at that time they said, hey, would you like to do this? And I said, yeah, sure. Where do I sign? Because I was broke. Right. And essentially what happened is they paid for my training to do aesthetics. And eventually what happened is I piggybacked that off my practice. My practice got busy. I started up my own, my initial solo practice, so to speak. But eventually over time it started getting busier. And then I had to, resign from that medical director position. But I had a small following of patients that I would do aesthetics on, Botox and fillers and things like that. And it's interesting because over time, the practice grew. My vein practice grew. I created a multi-specialty group practice where we had, independent physicians. Most of them were just primary docs and nurse practitioners. And then at the same time, I had a small following of these aesthetic patients. So in the lobby, you'd have somebody coming in for a sore throat. And then at the same time, I'm trying to fix their varicose veins. And then the person next to them wants to get Botox in their lips done.
Right.
So I would say about 2013, what we did is we carved out one of my other businesses, which is called Sky Balance Med Spa. Mm-hmm. In 2013, we carved that out and I created a standalone. And I would say around that time, that's when all the stuff just started going just going gangbusters. I would say that Instagram, social media, Facebook, a lot of the reality shows came out where, I would say clients were more interested in not going under the knife, but doing minimally invasive procedures just to look better, right? That whole stigma of trying to go in and out of an office back in 06, 07, and don't let anybody know I was here because I was getting Botox and trying to sneak out the back door. Right. I mean, that all just literally just completely went out the window. And 2013, when we carved out Sky Balance, Instagram came around, and then it just took off from there. And every year we've just been I've been improving my skill set, taking on new procedures. There's been a battery of new sort of injectables that have come along. And it's kind of, keeping up with the Joneses to some degree, but this field is really, really evolving.
Right.
Over time, I would say, I backed off from internal medicine. Sometimes you have to pick and choose because it's hard to do everything. But now I essentially for the past, I would say 15 years, I've been doing, aesthetics and veins. I had the primary care and the group practice, kind of sold that off a little bit, but there are things that come, there are things that go. But overall, it's been a really great journey.
Yeah. No, and I think that's kind of key. One of the things that, as I said before, that impressed me is you actually, just because you have a certain craft, right? You took that craft that you had, which was internal medicine, you spun that into veins as you studied that, and then turned that into fillers and injectables and aesthetics.
Absolutely.
And I think that's the important thing for everybody out there to understand is you may go in one direction and think that that's going to be your road for the rest of your life, but really you take the skills that you have from what you learn there and you go ahead and pivot and do something that's either more comfortable for you or something that may be more profitable, whatever the reason is, you go ahead, you pivot, and you do something different.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. You know, I'm a big Warren Buffett fan. And I truly do believe that the best investment is yourself. Yep. You know, I mean, is your trade, is your hands, your skill set. Know and do what you love and you'll be successful.
Yeah.
I mean, at times too, you know, you have to take risks. I mean, I've taken risks in different fields and, you know, some things worked out and some things different, you know, did not. But for the most part, I stayed always in tune with like with the whole medical aspect of things, and it's got me where I am. So I'm very thankful.
You know? So you're saying some of the things you tried didn't actually work out. So not to put you on the spot.
No, absolutely.
But what was one of your biggest,
you know,
failures, I mean, and then what'd you learn from that?
I mean, you know, okay, I'll give you an example. So at one point I owned a physical therapy practice. It was okay. You know, I mean, it was okay, but I mean, it definitely requires its own sort of like work from a marketing perspective and, you know, getting things going. And it just wasn't there. You know, I mean, my heart wasn't really into it. I think it definitely required a lot more work than, you know, I thought that it needed. But, you know, at some point I said to myself, I don't know if I really want to be doing this. You know, and I wound up selling the physical therapy practice and I feel significantly better as a result of it.
Right.
So, I mean, that's an example right there I can tell you about, you know. I mean, if you want more, I could tell you about more businesses that I failed at than I've been successful at.
Yeah.
But, you know, all it takes is a few really, really good things. And man, I'm telling you, you know, you can get a couple really good homers out there and you connect that bat to the ball and that thing just sails.
All right. You only have to hit the ball, what, 1/3 of the time, and you're in the Hall of Fame.
You're batting .333. That's pretty damn good, right?
Yeah.
Right?
No,
so, exactly. And that's kind of like the way I see things. But I would say that's one thing. I mean, I can give you more examples. If you'd like more examples.
Yeah, go ahead.
well, you know, okay, I'll tell you something. So I'm also in the lab space, right?
I was going to ask you about that. I know you have a lab.
I'm president of a laboratory as well. I mean, it's called TriLab Health. We started this off back in 2014. By the grace of God, that's been, you know, it's a good business.
Why not SkyPoint? Just curious. No, I'm kidding.
Well, I mean, you know, the SkyPoint was my dad's, you know, construction company name, right? But TriLab was interesting because I had two other partners at the time.
Right.
But I will say I got into that as a result of I would say not that great of a business, but it kind of helped me to kind of understand that I evolved into something better. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So, for example, like at one point I had an interventional pain practice and it was a collaboration agreement with one of my friends that I went to, to med school with, and he's an interventional pain practice doc. He's very successful now in the city. But at that time I had, you know, I had a C-arm, we had a like surgical suite and the name of that surgical suite, go figure, it's called SkyPoint Surgical Suite, right? So during that time he did some ancillary testing and I got to better understand, you know, toxicology, for example, right? Our laboratory specializes in toxicology. Like it's called LCMS. It's quantitative analysis of like micro analytic substances that you can find in medications that patients take.
Okay.
For example, like maybe some drugs of abuse or psychiatric medications. And I mean, we test for this. And essentially, you know, that surgical suite was okay, but I wound up closing it down. Actually, I closed it down probably like about 2021 or so, sold the C-arm off to another pain doctor. But that allowed for me to be a segue to get into the lab space. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure.
And then so, you know, the lab now, I mean, it's been growing. I mean, we have a lot of, you know, behavioral health clientele, like hospitals, private doctors, you know, facilities. We specialize in rolling out various institutions. But, you know, that one, if I didn't know about that, if I didn't try that with my friend, having that interventional pain practice and opening up the surgical suite and really truly understanding the ancillary space, I would have never gotten into like where I am from a laboratory perspective. Does that make sense?
Yeah. No.
So it's kind of like, you know, you stick to what you know. But, you know, SkyPoint Surgical Suite, it wasn't all that great, but it was a means to where I am now, right?
Right.
And now we're continuing to grow the laboratory. You know, SkyBalance, I've kind of consolidated. I mean, you know, I take a lot of great advice from you, right? I mean, over the past few years, I think you've just guided me through a lot of important decisions. And I've consolidated into, you know, a few things that I think that really have tremendous value. I love being a vein doctor. I don't think I'll ever give it up. I just got out of clinic today doing procedures. I really enjoy aesthetics. I love working with my hands. I like taking care of these patients and seeing the smiles on their face after they walk out the door. But then I also enjoy growing this business, this laboratory. And I mean, we've literally started it from the ground up, and it's continuing to grow. And right now my focus and attention are these main things.
Yeah, no, I think that's fantastic. And I think that's a good takeaway for the audience, right?
Yeah.
Is that, you have a skill set, you've tried different things.
Sure.
Some of the things that you try, they weren't a failure because just like you said, you had a surgical center that you were able to parlay off of that and actually get into the lab segment. So
absolutely.
It's important to be able to understand that sometimes you're going to move down a certain road. We talk about this all the time, right? We talk about setting a blueprint. You get a blueprint and you think your life is going to turn out a certain way, and sometimes it doesn't. But as long as you're moving in that direction, I think that's the key point.
Sure. I mean, it's all about moving forward, taking calculated strategic decisions, and having some great counsel as well. Because, I mean, I don't know it all, right? So, but I think when you surround yourself with very, smart, like-minded people, and, you're open to taking some good advice, then things fall into place.
No, and I think that's applicable not only to the medical field.
Yeah.
I don't care if you're starting a company that has something to do with lawn maintenance or something to do with cars. It's generally the same formula, the things that you're talking about. It's the ability to go ahead, understand the field that you're going into. And one of the key things that you just said that I think is extremely important is surround yourself with people that know more than you.
Absolutely.
You know, there's a saying, if you're the smartest person in the room, you're in the wrong room, right?
Oh,
so
for
you
sure.
Always want to be able to make sure that you learn from everyone else. And I think that's one of the keys.
I'm constantly humbled. I am constantly learning. I love being the dumbest one at the table because then I'm just absorbing as much as possible.
No, that's key. You know, you said something earlier in the conversation. Yeah. You said, to be able to develop yourself. And I think it was Jim Rohn said, if you work on your job, you'll make a living. But if you work on yourself, you'll make a fortune.
Absolutely.
And I don't think that only has to deal with money. That's just your entire life. You have a fortune in everything, in relationships, et cetera. So I think those are key points without a doubt.
Yeah, thank you. Know? Well noted.
So what would you do different? Anything?
God, this guy, he always asks me some good questions. What would I do different? If I could, I would definitely listen more. I think it's really, really important, rather than taking action and being hasty, to really just, sit down and write things out, listen, and, try and do your best to take making a very, very smart, educated, wise, calculated decision that's not just going to affect you, from a business perspective. But it's also going to affect all the people around you, right? From a personal perspective too. Right. How is this going to affect your family? How is this going to affect your friends? How is this going to affect your personal life? Before getting into 5, 10, 15 different things, because there's only so much you can do, is do your best to not spread yourself thin. And if you are going to do something, really focus your energy and do it. And sometimes I feel and you've known me for a little while, and I feel like I'm a different Samir now than I was 3 or 4 years ago.
Right.
Because I feel at some point that I did think that I was, spreading myself a little thin. And you can only do so much, right? And we have a limited amount of time on this earth. And now I'm realizing that consolidate and focus and hone your energy on things that are really going to make a positive difference without spreading yourself too thin.
No, I think well said. And we talk about that a lot.
Sure.
We've talked about that through the time that I've known you.
Yes.
How do you go ahead and actually consolidate?
Yes. Yeah.
But I think the real question you have to ask yourself, whether you're in medicine, construction, whatever the field is what is it do you want? And I think a lot of people don't ask themselves that question. And especially I think docs, because what happens is it takes us so long to become physicians that once we complete being a physician, I think we say, okay, we've arrived.
Correct.
And we don't set any other goals. Yeah. We get on that merry-go-round or the yeah. hamster wheel, and yes. we continue to run and run and run. And
yep.
we find ourselves 40 years down the line, three wives in, diabetic and obese, and trying to figure out where we went wrong.
Yeah.
But I think that is important, is to decide
sure.
what is it that you want. Why do you want it? And are you truly committed to it? And like we said,
yep.
sometimes you'll go down that path. You may have to deviate. You may not
yeah.
end up where you thought you were going to end up, but at least you have some direction. I think that's the key.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Very, very well said. You know.
Burnout.
Burnout's real.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, I didn't believe it, you know, to some degree, because, you know,
you were skeptical when I talked to you about burnout.
Yeah, you know, because, you know, us doctors, we know everything. Right. I mean, oh, that's not going to happen to me. You're just thinking, look, that's the other guy, or you read about it, or you might go to, like, you know, you sit down session or a conference or something. But then you really start to think about yourself. Like, even for me, you know, I mean, at first when I met you, I was kind of skeptical. Right. But when you and I, you know, we became friends, started working together, you know, talking more, I realized, like, wow, man, there's a lot here that I'm doing that is, you know, it's burning the candle at both ends.
Yeah.
So I feel like I'm in, you know, a better place now from consolidating. Like, I have more time to do things, and now it's a lot more important for me to spend more time, like, you know, with my family, with my wife, you know, travel more, and not just, you know, try to put in 80, 90 hours a week and think that this is completely normal.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of doctors do that. I mean, we're used to that mindset where you're working, you know, quote unquote, like, you know, Q2, Q4 calls, and you're putting in like 30, 40 hours, you know, like every 3-4 days. And it's just kind of like what you know, because you're sleeping at the hospital, and it's just who you are. But you really have to think about it, because it takes a toll on you. Physician burnout is truly, truly real.
Yeah.
And I think the younger generation, I think it's important for them to understand this, especially if you want to have longevity in this field, right?
Yeah.
So...
No, I think this field, I agree 100%. And now, actually, you know, us being physicians, it's
yep.
kind of a closed circuit. So we always heard that it was the physicians that were burnt out. But you actually look at it now, everyone's burnt out.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And it's just that accumulated stress without any direction as to where you're going. And really, that self-care component just isn't there anymore.
Oh,
nowadays,
absolutely.
Unfortunately, you know, you talked about the boom of aesthetics when Instagram came in, and
yeah.
everybody wanted to have that face, and
sure.
they wanted to
sure.
look good, which I think is extremely important. The same thing happens with young kids. I talked
yeah.
to a lot of young kids from our Instagram channel, and they want everything tomorrow. It's that microwave society. I want it right away now. And they don't realize that things take time, you know, especially
yeah.
good things take time. And what you're chasing is a material thing. If you're not in the right mindset and you're not taking care of yourself, you could chase all those material things, but they're going to eventually go away,
yeah.
or you're going to sacrifice something like your health for those things.
Oh, for sure.
You know?
I mean, you know, your health is your wealth, right?
Right.
I mean, without your health, you don't have anything.
Yeah.
So, I mean, physician burnout and the stress that goes with it, I mean, it definitely takes a toll on your body.
Yeah.
It takes a toll on your mind.
Yeah.
So you need to decompress, and you got to take time for yourself. And you just have to accept the fact that if you want to stay in this game for a while, then there are things that you need to do to minimize physician burnout, right?
Yeah,
like exercise, meditation, you know, take some trips, relax, decompress.
Yeah, no.
Right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, start with your physicality. We talk
oh, yeah,
about that all
sure.
the time. Sleep,
for
nutrition,
sure.
diet, your mindset.
Absolutely.
Extremely important. And then emotional intelligence, how smart you actually are
yeah.
in all of those areas. Really makes a difference. And I think a lot of people, and I was one of these people. I mean,
yeah.
you know, when I ran
my ER doc, right?
Yeah, when
right.
I ran my ER group, I mean, that
right.
was all command and control. I remember docs
sure.
used to come up to me that were my employees. Oh, you never compliment me. I said, did the check bounce? No, there's your compliment. You know, so it was,
yeah, right?
you know, you were really a hard
yeah,
ass. And
I know.
And you said it earlier, where did that come from? That came from the training, right?
I know, it's the hazing.
I mean, that, yeah,
of.
That's the
I
beliefs
mean, that's,
that we have.
Like, and we went through it, so you got to go through it.
That's right.
right?
Because
we
think we're doing them a favor,
and
in reality,
we weren't.
You
yeah,
know,
we weren't.
It's
I mean,
completely different. But I think the pendulum kind of swung all the way the other way.
It did.
Because I think people are a little yeah. bit too weak now and have it too good. And I think there's a happy medium somewhere
there.
It
needs
you know?
To land right in the middle.
Yeah.
I mean, it can't be one way or the other, but I totally agree with you. Because you can't, I mean, doing what we do is definitely challenging, but it's not like, hey, you know, you're soft to some
right.
degree. But I think that if you, You're right. It just needs to be. It needs to come in the middle.
Yeah,
I agree. Totally.
Somewhere in the middle is going to make, and it'll swing back. It always does.
Oh, for sure.
You know, bell bottoms are coming back, right? So everything comes back in fashion and culture and beliefs.
Oh, absolutely.
I think everything comes back. So, you know, one of the things that we want to do with the podcast is really have fun, and we took our cars, right? We took medicine and self development. We hit on a couple. We didn't talk about cars, so that's actually how I met you. I think it was at a car show.
Well,
right?
I've always been a car guy. I mean, I think I started off with my first nice car was, you know, a C5 Corvette, and I loved that thing.
Right.
And I thought I was just the coolest guy, right? I mean, here's this Indian guy like 5'7", 150 pounds, and you know, and a C5 Corvette, and I got my arm off to the left, like with the steering wheel, you know, looking at you. And I look back now, I'm like, dude, the guy's a dork. You know? So, right. So, but I mean, it evolved from there. And I mean, I've always been into cars. I've always been into, you know, the car culture a little bit. I enjoy modifications.
What'd you do to your Lambo? That's how we met.
I've been through various cars. Like, I mean, I've had, you know, a Gallardo. I mean, I've had, you know, like
which one had the twin turbo done to it? Was it the Gallardo or was that a Hurricane?
That was the Huracan I had. That was a twin turbo kit I had on there.
Yeah.
And I mean, I can go into, I'm not that much of a gearhead, but I can get into a little bit, but I think I'll start boring everybody.
Yeah.
But
you had some beautiful cars.
You know, GT3, Porsche, you know, cup car. I had the Huracan.
Yeah. Favorite car?
Oh, wow. That's a good one. You know, they're... I mean, in looks, I would have to say, you know, the Aventador. It's just got a certain look to it.
Yeah.
But, you know, with that single clutch transmission, though, it's like kind of like, it's very laggy. So you got to get used to driving it. But it's a beautiful car, and it looks amazing. It sounds amazing with the V12.
Right.
But I think the best car to drive that was the most comfortable, believe it or not, was probably that twin turbo Huracan.
Really?
I mean, the sound that it made with all like the bells and, you know, with the whining, the turbo whines and then the downshifts. You got to be really into cars to really enjoy it. I mean, you can drive it from here to like Indiana and you'd be like totally fine. Your back doesn't hurt and everything. Mm-hmm. It just drives great. But at the same time, you know, you can... you're literally hitting like the quarter mile in like 9 seconds. For me, it was insane because it kind of brings back that thrill of the roller coaster. I mean, not that I'm doing like 9 second pulls on the highway.
Right.
So, right. But, those days are numbered. But I would have to say that's probably pound for pound one of the best driving cars that I've driven, you know.
Great.
Looking wise, I would say I've always been a Lambo guy. So,
No Ferraris for you ever, huh?
No, but you know what though? Don't get me wrong. I'm really digging, you know, the A12 super fast with that V12 note. I love yours, by the way, with that black and red spec. First time I saw it, I was like, God damn, this thing looks nice with that GTS.
Yeah. That was a nice car.
Oh, that's really beautiful. That car, I like the GTS, you know, the A12 SF90s are always beautiful. But once you start getting into like, you know, the hypercar Ferraris, it's a whole different level, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I need to open and grow a few more businesses, like to start getting into.
Well,
you're on the right track.
That's for sure.
You know
you're
what? Right hey, track. You always got to set the bar high for yourself.
Yeah.
But you know, I mean, I've always been a Lambo guy, but I'm thinking about making the switch. You know.
Yeah. Well, so. Yeah. No, you'll enjoy them.
I mean, you know,
out of all of them, though, you know, for me, the
how about you?
The Porsche. Believe it or not, I love all of those, but for me, the Porsche. Because you could take the Porsche and go get a gallon of milk.
Oh, for sure.
I could take the Pista and go get a gallon of milk. But as I'm getting older, it's harder to get out.
Yeah.
You got to watch where you're parking. It's, you know, it's just completely different. I love driving that car, the Pista down in Florida when we take it down there or in Arizona.
I love that car.
But really, you know, to have the Porsche to go, you could go to work in the Porsche. You could take the Porsche on the track. You can do all kinds of things.
It's all-wheel drive. You can drive it in your wintertime. It's like the perfect all-around car, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like a super sleeper. It's not as ostentatious as like a Pista, right? So, I mean, it goes a little unnoticed, but that's to its advantage, and that's also sometimes to its flaw.
Right.
But oh, man, I've always been a Porsche fan. I mean, I had a GT3, right? I mean, I was hawking the 911 Turbo. I've always been a Porsche fan. I think I might have to get into one someday.
Yeah.
You
know? No.
Yeah.
And I like the Honda a little bit too. The smashed Honda is always good to
drive.
Well,
you know, I'm in like the company loaner car, so it actually feels
good.
Yeah,
the other day we met somewhere and you parked next to me and I'm waiting and waiting and you text me, I'm already in there. I'm like, where'd you go? I didn't know what car you brought.
Exactly. Well, and sometimes you don't have to worry about them, right? I mean,
that's the catch, right? Exactly. You don't have to park somewhere way the heck down because you're worried that a shopping cart's going to take the side out. Yep. So if you didn't do medicine, what do you think you would have done?
Good question. You know, I think I would do something along the lines of, I do enjoy being an entrepreneur. I do enjoy business. Maybe something along the lines of investment banking or, mergers and acquisitions. Maybe I would just try opening up a different business. I just love being an entrepreneur. Something along those lines, I think would be interesting. I mean, I think I got the bug from one of my friends, back in the late 90s, and he's doing really well, and he's been a serial entrepreneur, and he does, private equity, and now he's got his own hedge fund.
Oh, wow.
So he's one of my best friends. And at that time when I was doing my rotations, actually I was in New York, and I lived with him in the Upper East Side in New York. Mm-hmm. And it just kind of, I think I got into that bug because me and him had some really cool conversations. And, after a while it just lit a spark for me,
That's great. So obviously very successful.
I'm trying. I don't see myself like that.
That you've done.
I appreciate it. I don't see myself like that. I set the bar high. But I'll take a compliment when I can. So thank you.
So what do you think was, if you had to isolate it, as we sit and we talk about the My Focus model, we talk a lot about habits and things of that nature. What do you think was the one habit? I know you have a lot of habits, but the one habit that really helped you move along and be successful?
Wow. I mean, I feel like it was it's intertwined. But if I were to say it, I would say, like you said, I think being more mindful, being more aware, not being impulsive, and believe it or not, I feel it's multifactorial, but I think it all kind of comes together, exercise, health, meditation to some degree, right?
Right.
I mean, so I think it definitely all comes together, but that's a hard one. But I would say being more mindful, being more aware, and then understanding the decisions you make and the repercussions and, the ramifications of some of the decisions that you make, two things that can't be taken back, a thrown rock and a spoken word.
Right.
Right.
Well said.
So, so you have to be really cautious with what you do, how you do it, and, and what you say. Right, because it does impact a lot of people. So I find myself being a lot more mindful. I find myself not being as I think speaking with you, working with you, not being as for example, all of a sudden you pass this threshold and then your skull cap blows off and then there's fumes flying and
right.
and fire. Right. I mean, I feel like I try not to reach that threshold. I try to maintain my composure, and I think that has a lot to do with mindfulness. Right.
No, well said. They did a survey of the top CEOs of companies.
Sure.
And they said that the number one skill for their leadership in their company is the self-awareness piece.
Yeah.
And I think the ability to stop and actually understand, hey, where am I at? What am I trying to do?
Yep.
And take that ego and push that ego aside. And work.
I will say that something that you taught me that I use a lot more on a day-to-day basis, which I think is great for your listeners and viewers, is I now see problems not as problems. I now see problems as challenges.
Yeah.
And I mean, for me, I'll try to overcome that challenge and not look at it as if, oh God, this is a problem. This is something that I got to deal with. I look at it as more of, okay, it's a competition. Let's see how we can tackle this and let's see how we can take care of this. And let's see how we can overcome this challenge to get to the next step. So it's almost like making it a game.
Right.
And if you do that, I found that it really does help quite a bit. And I use that quite a bit. So I wanted to just thank you for that.
No, my pleasure.
Yeah.
I'm glad to know you were listening.
Well, hey,
I was talking to you.
I better be, man. Trust me. But thank you so much.
No, I appreciate it. So Samir, it's an interesting practice in the sense that you do veins, right?
Sure.
And veins is more of a medical, although there is a cosmetic component to it as well.
Yeah.
And then you have that entire aesthetic piece that you do. I was reading something on aesthetics, something like 6.5 to 7% of all of the population has had some type of injectable.
For sure.
And a majority of those tend to be females.
Yep.
In your practice, is it primarily for the aesthetics? Is it primarily females? Is it males? Who's sure. your normal clientele?
At Sky Balance, I would say that... if you were to take this back like in 06, 07, when I first started off, I would literally say like 99% of my clients were females. Probably over the past few years, I am seeing quite a few men coming in. I mean, is it to the degree of women? No. I would say, you're looking at probably like, I'd still probably close to like, 90%, women, like maybe 10% men. But a lot, this is the stigma of getting these procedures and getting quote unquote, work done is completely gone. I mean, I feel like this is like just, we're in a society now where everybody wants to just kind of look their best and feel their best.
Well, 60's the new 30.
Yeah, exactly. So. I mean, it's funny because sometimes, I'll go through like different feeds and it'll just pop up on my phone and you'll see like somebody in their 50s. Or even 60s or 70s, you're looking at them and it's like the youngest golden girl is like 50 years old, right? And I mean, you look at 50-year-olds now and you're talking like J-Lo, right? I mean, and they look like flawless, right?
Yeah, there's a huge shift.
Oh, it's huge, right? Yeah. I mean, and I feel like that shift has happened as a result of a lot of these minimally invasive procedures. I feel like everybody wants to look their best and do what's best for them to try and live their best life. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that, right? I mean, people go out there and get their hair colored, they go get their nails done. Guys want to be well groomed. I just feel like this is kind of an adjunct to that to help you to just kind of look and feel a little bit better.
No, I agree 100%. And I think it's important because it also, when you look at it from a success perspective,
sure.
what that does is it's actually feeding your confidence.
Yeah.
I think the better you feel, you put on a new suit, you get a little bit of Botox or something, you feel like a different person.
Oh, absolutely.
And as you feel, that allows you to focus on what's at hand instead of being self-conscious of, hey, what am I doing here? What am I doing there?
Yeah.
Have you ever had someone who actually comes in who's a repeat person, who comes in a little bit too often for the Botox? And how do you deal with that psychological component?
Well, there is. There's always a psychological component, right? I mean, number one, no matter what field you're in, you always have to choose the right patient or you always have to choose the right client. And sometimes it's okay to say no. Right. And sometimes it's okay to cut people off. There's nothing wrong with that. I feel like as long as you have a heart to heart conversation with them and, you tell them truly what they should and what they shouldn't be doing. And patients will listen to their doctors. And sometimes, if you don't connect, it's okay. Right. Maybe they'll go and seek another second opinion. But I feel like the nice thing is since I've been established in this, industry for a little while, I have a lot of great clients that have been repeat clients and they're happy. And you find that happy medium, so to speak, right? Yes. And I mean, nowadays, I think there's a push for everyone not to be so overdone. And I think it's more of a push towards like a natural, refreshed, rejuvenated look.
Yeah, sometimes I see
people,
and you could tell.
I
think the worst thing is when you could actually tell that something.
Oh, for sure. I mean, the whole goal for me and my practice is I like it when our clients are like looking their best, but all of a sudden someone comes up to them and say, wow, you look great. Like, what have you been doing? They can't figure it out. They think that, is it like the water? Is it like yoga? Are they sleeping better? But all of a sudden it's just like, wow, you look great. You look like yourself, but you just look better. And they can't figure it out. And that's the true tell, because then you're not overdone, but you look naturally refreshed or age rejuvenated or age refreshed. That's really kind of like, the pathway that I'm going down right now.
Are you seeing younger and younger people coming?
Well,
this?
Yeah, to some degree. I mean, there was that whole thing about, for a few years ago where it's even to now, to some degree, like, trying to get your lips done and it's looking too big, right? Where you're walking down the street and you look at somebody and you're like, well, it's like,
duck lips.
Yeah. Duck alert. Right.
Yeah.
But now I think like over time I've become definitely way more conservative. I've cut you know, some clients off. I just say, hey, you don't need it. Because sometimes, you know, you do these procedures. I'll give lips for as an example, right? You know, you have some injectors, they're putting more and more product in. And you know what happens is the product has a tendency to stack. And if it doesn't sort of, you know, go down a little bit on its own, because a lot of this is like hyaluronic, you know, it does right. break down. But if it does stack on itself, then what happens? It starts to migrate. So, you know, to prevent that, you want to reduce, you know, the amount of product you put in. You want to reduce the duration that you see the client. It's not about the money. It's not about, because I feel like I'm past that. For me, it's like, you know, you have, you know, that's your walking billboard. Right. If they look good, it's because of you. If they look overdone and, you know, you got these huge duck lips, guess what? It's got like, you know, Dr. Samir's signature on there.
Right.
Because I'm the guy that did it.
Right. Where'd you go?
Exactly. So I feel like over time I've become a lot more conservative. And that's just kind of like more of the look. It's just become a lot more naturally refreshed, naturally rejuvenated. And that's what we offer at, you know, at Sky Balance. And I think it's been working for us.
Yep. Average age of someone that comes in for aesthetics, or is it across the board?
It depends. I mean, I think, you know, you start doing a lot of full face rejuvenations in the older populations, you know, like, but I would say, you know, the younger generation, they're more interested in just minor stuff, you know, a little bit of lips here and there, or maybe just like some, like just preventive Botox or other neuromodulators. Now there's so many of them. I mean, we stock everything at the office, but I mean, yeah, I would say probably a good, 25 is a little early starting off, right? But I would say definitely like, you know, like 30s and going all the way up into like, you know, I have clients coming in that are like, you know, 60s, 70s all day, right. You know? So I feel like everybody wants to look good, but it's a matter of looking the best that you can look at your age and looking age refreshed and age rejuvenated. Now, whether that's at like 30 or whether that's at like 65 or 70, you know, that's trying to make you look good where you're at. Right. Does that make sense?
No, makes sense.
Yeah.
How many of them, I'm just curious, because again, we kind of talked about this, where everybody wants that microwave society, everything to be done, right? You've got the Ozempic and the fillers and everything is done. How many of your clientele actually have health as a priority, and this is an adjunct as opposed to doing everything the wrong way, right? And just using this to fix their problems.
Well, I mean, you know, where I'm in the aesthetic world, but I mean, there is definitely, you have to, medicine is all encompassing.
Right.
So, you know, I never ever negate what the patient's primary doctors or anything else along those lines are actually doing. You know, I'm just kind of there to sort of compliment them, so to speak, but I never want to take away from their internal health, right? I mean, now there's like this big push with weight loss, you know, Ozempic, but and what do I think about that? I think definitely it has a place, but at the same time, you know, you also have to like take it. You have to be the right candidate for it. It can't be like a fix all. You also have to incorporate diet and exercise.
That's my worry with a lot of these things is that, as we continue to advance, it's taking the place of the fundamentals.
Well, yeah.
I think to adjunct to those fundamentals is phenomenal. That makes sense.
Yep.
But if you know, are going to sit out in the sun and get wrinkles, but don't worry about it, I'm going to get Botox, or I'm going to eat this pizza because I'm going to go have some Ozempic. That's what worries me. If you have the fundamentals and you use it as an adjunct, just like you said, to be the best version of yourself that you can,
absolutely.
I think that's phenomenal.
Yeah, and it's got to be multidisciplinary, right? Yeah. I mean, we're always looking for the quick fix. That's what we're geared for.
Right.
Right? So, I mean, but it's not. It's like it's multifaceted. It's multidisciplinary. And you have to incorporate a lot of different things to get to where you are from a health perspective and be healthy, right? Can't just be like, hey, let me do this and take this shot. And now I don't need to do anything else. No, there's more to that, right?
From the men's perspective, is it primarily the Botox or are there a lot of fillers?
Guys are an interesting, you know, I mean, that saying that goes, men are from Mars, you know, what is it? Men are from Mars, women are from Venus. It totally holds weight. And I love working with men, and I'm going to tell you why. Because one is guys are like puppy dogs, okay? You do one or two things for them and they're just blown away. Right. They're like, oh my God, I can't believe, like, hey, wow, you actually like lifted this a little bit for me, or you got rid of the smile line, or we did a little laser skin resurfacing. And then all of a sudden they're just like, what just happened? You know, right. they're thankful. They're a lot. I mean, look, you know, they're a little easier, right? So I would say that it's a whole new field with this explosion of men coming in. I think that's going to be a definite like big shift. And I know a lot of the bigger companies now are catering to a lot more like male treatments, which I love. I love working with guys. But definitely that's like a huge swing. I hope I answered your question.
Yeah, I think that's extremely important. You know, we joke, but I was reading an article the other day that they were talking about the difference between people that are 65 now and 65 10, 15, 20 years ago. People were retired.
Yeah.
And now people are working till they're 80. There's 65-year-olds with 8-packs climbing, you know, Mount Everest.
For sure.
And I think that whole aesthetics piece is important, because that's what you're looking at in the mirror, you know. And if it helps you feel good, it helps you get out there to do the fundamentals, the exercise, watch your diet, more power to
you. Well, I mean, it's a part of it, right? I mean, it's not all of it, but it's a part of it. Yeah. So I definitely think there's a great psychological component into like looking good and feeling good. I mean, I have patients that come in, you know, I'll do a little bit of, you know, neuromodulator, like Botox or whatever, like, you know, Dysport, Juvo, anything, Xeomin. Right. And I'll do that for some patients that come in, they have these like these 11s, so to speak, you know, and where they're, the frown lines, and you kind of, you just go in there and you freeze them up a little bit. And next thing you know, it opens their eyes up. And now all of a sudden they're like, oh my God, I feel like, you know, I don't feel as depressed as I was. I don't feel as tired looking as I was. And it just helps them. It helps their mood, you know. But you know, it's more power to them, right?
No.
So I mean, people come in for different reasons. Don't get me wrong. I mean, it's majority of it is cosmetic. It's aesthetic. But you know, it made me realize that, like, hey, look, you know, I'm making a significant difference. I mean, I love doing full face rejuvenation, whereas before, I think there's been a big swing. Where it was before, someone comes in, hey, I got like, you know, crow's feet, or I got this line here, and then you would take care of it and then you would let them go. But now it's more about, hey, let's do some, you know, let's do full face. Mm-hmm. Let's go ahead and let's tackle this. Let's take that. Let's lift this. Let's incorporate laser. Let's get them on a good skin regimen. And it's more along the lines of like A to Z rather than just A. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, definitely. You got me sold. I get, you know, everybody's telling me I'm looking too old, so I'll be in there next Wednesday.
You know the right guy.
No lips though. No lips.
Maybe just a little bit. Maybe just a little bit. Right. All right. Yeah.
Oh, good.
But no, for sure. I mean, it's a great field. I enjoy it. I love working with my hands. It complements my vein practice, because I do everything with the vein practice with minimally invasive. I do everything under ultrasound guidance, so I use a lot of needles. And then I also use a lot of needles in my aesthetics practice.
Right.
So I'm working. I love it because people will say, well, why don't you go into like plastic surgery? Or why don't you go into, you know, becoming a surgeon? And, you know, my answer to that is I like also being an outpatient. You know, you either enjoy cutting or you enjoy not cutting. You either enjoy being in the hospital or you enjoy not being in the hospital. Mm-hmm. So these are decisions that I would say like a lot of medical students have to make. And then it eventually like kind of funnels you down into like who you are and what you're practicing. So for me, like the aesthetic practice complements what I do, because even in the vein practice, everything is done endovenous, like it's done under ultrasound guidance. So I'm using needles. Can I cut? Yes. Right. But I do everything under a non-invasive means, using needles and ultrasound. And then I also use needles at the aesthetics practice. So, I love it because it kind of piggybacks off each other. One's more like insurance based and more like sick care, and the other is more like well care. So for me, I feel like I get a good balance between both.
Yeah, it's a nice blend. Yeah.
It is. I mean, I enjoy it and I love it. I feel like, you know, you're making a difference, and I'm just going to keep it going, you know?
Yeah. When you first started with internal medicine at County, what did you see? Did you see yourself just being an internal medicine
doc?
No,
you know, I mean, at that point, I wanted to definitely do some sort of a fellowship. I thought about actually allergy and immunology. I mean, one of my, like I said, my mentors, he kind of coached me along those lines. But, you know, it just, I don't know, I just wasn't feeling it. You know, and so And eventually it just kind of, it just, there's certain things that I just, it just kind of comes your way. One of my good friends right now is actually, he's the vascular sonographer who works with me. And he pioneered and started off a few, vein practices, you know, back in the early 2000s.
Yeah, I think I met him.
Yeah. 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 So then, and you know, he and I connected. He was actually doing, you know, ultrasounds and doing some ancillary work for the primary care group. And we started talking and he said, "Hey, you know, what are your thoughts on that whole sort of this pivot about becoming, say, a vein specialist?" Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I was an internist practicing internal medicine and practicing routine internal medicine from, you know, a good 4, 5, 6 years. But then, you know, I reinvested in myself. And I thought about it and I said, "Hey, wow, this is something that I could do, that I have a great opportunity. It comes into play. Rarely sometimes opportunities like this fall into your lap. And when they do, you have to acknowledge it and you have to take it." Mm. So, you know, I mean, we just kind of like, we hit it off, you know, professionally. We're great friends outside the practice. He and I still work together up to this day. You know, we were just running cases earlier this afternoon. But I would say that, you know, that had a kind of like a big role as far as like who I am today and how things kind of just kind of snowballed into the vein practice. And it was great. It was a great opportunity. I'm very happy for it and thankful as well.
Hey, listen, I appreciate having you on here.
Yeah.
You gave the audience a lot of tidbits.
Great.
I'm glad I know you. I respect you a lot. I think you're great for the medical community.
Thank
and
you.
I'm in awe of all of your different endeavors. And every time the phone rings and it's you, I'm scared that you're going to start something new.
So. No, trust me. I've learned my lesson and I look to good people to advice. I mean, you've definitely, you know, help solidify me and make me more of who I am today. And that's a better person.
No, so, likewise. I learned from everyone and I've learned a lot of things from you. So again, thanks for being on and we'll see you soon.
Hey, I'd love to come on again. Thanks again, guys.
Take care.
Take care.